For May the 1st, 2015, we talk about the cancellation of Silent Hills, the Steam paid mods debacle, and we ask you about the funniest trolls. As a warning, this episode has some spotty audio quality due to poor internet connection issues. Hopefully this will be worked out by the next time. But until then, welcome to the 102nd level. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
My name is David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Guys, I am in the new studio.
Woohoo!
And by the new
studio... Yeah! Duckfeed Studios!
Woo! And by the new studio, I mean my new apartment.
So. Don't tell them that. We have a classy Hollywood studio with a panoramic view of Times Square.
Yep.
Infinite pool.
The infinity pool. Panoramic view of Times Square from LA.
No, no, infinite pool, as in, like, there's always someone playing pool.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which speaks to how well...
That, too.
Audio sealed off your actual recording booth is.
Oh yeah, I got it locked tight. I'm actually concerned about that, about the how well sealed off my recording room is. I'm recording in a very large dining room.
Oh, really?
It's carpeted. I'm sitting underneath the chandelier right now, which if death decided to pull a Final Destination on me, all it would have to do is drop this glass chandelier directly on my head. Oh. Yeah. But I think that I've eliminated most of the echo from this, which means I probably don't need to put up as much foam, which means I could actually hang art in the studio, which is nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So so you'll remember the last time I moved, I got into a car accident and injured myself and destroyed my car, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. This time got a crack in my windshield. And when I was cutting open the floor protector to go underneath my office chair today, it stripped the skin from my knuckles and elbows.
Oh, wait, no. What?
I'm not seeing bone or anything, but it's like, okay, here it goes. It snaps. And then all of a sudden, oh, yeah, there's blood everywhere.
Oh, goodness.
Yep. Hey, you moved like 30 feet. How did you get a crack in your windshield?
I don't know. I think it's just a rock hit. I'm still calling it correlation right now, but I'm kind of edging my way into causation because living suspiciously is much more entertaining. So
some people call it suspicion. Some people call it paranoia.
Yeah. Some people call it seeing clearly. So that explains at least
wake up sheeple.
I would never say that, dear God. but that explains why we were away last week. And I thank everybody for their patience as I get things sorted out and get back on my 2 feet. How about you guys? How has your past 2 weeks been or so?
I'm not dead yet.
You're sick, right?
Recover. I think I'm almost through it, but it was like, you know, I had a final boss of a head cold. maybe sinus infection. I don't know. But hopefully tomorrow I wake up and everything is hunky dory. And if not, I have a doctor's appointment scheduled where we will nuke this thing once and for all. So
yeah, that sucks.
Yep.
Ben, how about you?
I've not been sick, so I am doing just peachy.
Yeah. How about you, David? You're coming up on graduation, right?
Yeah, I graduate this Friday, so I am furiously getting everything ready for this, I guess.
What did it do to you? Why are you so mad?
It had it coming.
Yeah.
It is pretty the last minute work, you know, like it's, yeah. You would think everything would be done being a week out, but yeah. Nope.
No, not at all.
Yeah.
So much programming.
Well, we wish you the best of luck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So why don't we get into the show and talk about some video games? Because even though I don't have very much for the grind, this is going to be a pretty fruitful brief, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, after weeks of nothing happening whatsoever at all, now we're walking into Well, let's just do the usual billboard here. We got the news that we've got a multiplayer question that we ran by the audience here about trolling. And we're going to close out with the grind. But let's delay this news no further. All right. So I'm going to have you, Dennis, go first. What's your story?
Yeah, this was a story shared by Geolaw on our Facebook page. Which, if anyone else wants to do that, I'm more than happy to have you guys do the work for me. Actually finding interesting stuff to talk about. And this is a pretty interesting thing to talk about because VR seems to be a thing that people are determined to make stick. And now there's like, 6 million different headsets you can get into and everything like that. But a big problem is that for a not insignificant portion of the population, motion sickness is a huge deal. So there was a recent study done. And I'm looking for who the actual, it doesn't matter. Recent study done. I'll get to it eventually where, they reduced people's motion sickness by adding a virtual nose to the cameras. So it's kind of one of those, like I spent the rest of the day after I read it, kind of like realizing that I can actually see my nose at all times.
Oh yeah.
Whoa, man.
Yeah, exactly. So that was very mind expanding.
So you've never done drugs, have you?
Yeah. Realizing again just how amazing it is. Spending a lot of time cross-eyed, which wound up hurting a bit. But yeah, so it's a small improvement. It's something like 13%, and it's only some people who experience it. But if it allows more people to interact with games in a new way, that's a good thing.
Yeah. So you have to wonder how much that has to do with like the Horizon line. You know, yeah, so like if you're motion sick, like if you're riding in a boat or like on a particularly rough car ride or whatever, somebody who doesn't know what you're going through but pretends they know what the solution is. I don't have a history of motion sickness at all. Will tell you, pick a spot on the horizon and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And that is somehow supposed to help kind of put you back to a sense of equilibrium, right?
Yeah, because then you can feel terrible and not connect with somebody else.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah. Well, I imagine it's similar to like spotting, and if you're doing like a spin in like dance or martial arts, where you know if you actually look at something when you spin, you don't get dizzy.
Yeah. Yeah, so I suppose that has to be it. Like, but could it be as simple as verisimilitude?
Like, what do you mean?
By which I mean, without a nose, you are effectively just a ghost wandering around in these worlds with no connection to between what your mind is perceiving and the world that the game is trying to create for you, and your body, which is probably sitting in a room temperature room in a relatively comfortable chair.
Wait, is this some kind of cyberpunk?
Are you pitching a game right now?
Cut off from the digital world?
No, I'm not pitching a game, and I don't know how cyberpunk it is. But I guess what I'm saying is, if all that was missing was having a nose in your line of view, then that says that the best way to solve all these problems is to figure out what are these other minor sensory cues that we are taking for granted, like verisimilitude, like how accurately are we recreating these things that we otherwise don't pay attention to.
Okay. I think we've just answered the question to where does the human soul reside, and it's very clearly in the nose,
the tip of the nose. So is Rudolph the Red-Nosed
thought with the liver.
so is Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer just kind of like is he like a Dark Souls boss?
he's my dark Sherpa.
Yeah, I don't know. This is really weird because it doesn't seem to address the problem, right?
Wait. Which? I thought the problem was people throwing up.
Maybe. No, the problem. So I guess the perceived root of the problem, which is, again, that disconnect between your eyes telling you, hey, you're moving, and your inner ear saying you're actually totally not moving.
Mm. Yeah. I think they've identified something that is probably one of the most, in retrospect, obvious cues that's usually missing. Mm-hmm. And so, that you'll never be able to replicate it perfectly. Otherwise, just go outside, you dummy. Mm-hmm. But, this is a relatively easy fix, and it is a relatively important thing, or at least something that your mind on a subconscious level is very accustomed to and expects.
Yeah.
So I think that's helpful.
Hmm.
Sure. Very cool. Thank you, Gila.
Did we mention just, I thought a interesting part of this article was that this advance was discovered by the Navy while developing flight simulators.
Was that the Navy or was that the lead into it?
I thought they said it was the Navy that discovered this.
I think they were talking about the Navy discovering simulator sickness, but the Purdue University came up with the cure.
Dang it. I was kind of hoping that there was some like elite soldier in charge of noses.
Well, that begs the question, like what
happens to your snaz?
Like, does it have an effect if your nose is different than what it is in normal life? Like, does it have to match, or can you give me like, you know, a tiny little button nose and it won't bother me?
Yeah. Well, no, like what if you're playing that chicken simulator game and you see a beak? like does it just have to, like, so when you're focusing off in the distance, all your nose does is kind of create an imperceptible little dark blur at the bottom center of your field of view, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, I mean, I can't imagine that the shape would have to, that the shape would have that huge of an effect on it.
All I'm hearing is freemium content.
Paid my add-on nose.
Yep. Check out my virtual nose job.
Well, no, they said they sell the game to you, but then you have to it's DLC add-on to even get the nose. Not nose customization.
That would work with Mirror's Edge too.
Mirror's Edge 2 is hopeless in a lot of ways, but I don't think that there's anything anybody could possibly do to make it so that people don't get sick playing Mirror's Edge 2 mm-hmm. on VR, let alone, you know, on a screen that is, you know, 8 feet away from you.
Well, I feel like with Mirror's Edge, if almost the vast majority of the population did that in real life, they would probably throw up.
Yeah.
So it's like, of course, that's going to make people sick.
Yeah. Huh. Yeah, I don't know. What worries me about this is that this is exactly the kind of solution that people say, oh, it's so dumb, it's so simple, the problem is solved, right? And then it turns into a story that is easy to tell, like, hey, it's a nose, you dummy. Whereas the actual solution is probably much more complicated and much more difficult to explain, let alone to a layperson. I kind of don't like these, you know, this Malcolm Gladwell turns out kind of stuff where it's like, oh, well, actually, you know, the solution to this is actually really simple, when in reality, it probably is incredibly complicated.
Yeah. But at what point do you need to make a concession to, all right, you're not going to be able to replicate everything. Like, hey, this is the line of, hey, here are the reasonable things you can do to make it more accessible. And if that doesn't work for someone, it just sucks. Like you probably shouldn't be doing VR stuff anyway.
I trust John Carmack, I guess. So I'm going to go with a story from mine here that kind of hits near and dear, which is that Silent Hills has officially been canceled.
No.
Womp womp indeed. So this kind of seems to be a part of the expurgation of anything related to Kojima from Konami itself, and also apparently anything related to console development from Konami, which is incredibly sad. But this has been confirmed first by Guillermo del Toro and by Norman Reedus, who was the guy from Walking Dead, who was slated to be in the game, and later by the company itself saying, yeah, this has been canceled. And Konami's press release about this thing was actually very, I don't know, a little bit frustrating, because they said, hey, this game is embryonic and we're still looking forward to, you know, we're gonna have to kill it, even though it wasn't really much of anything yet, we're gonna have to kill it, but we are still kind of interested and invested in continuing, you know, exploring the Silent Hill franchise or whatever, right? Which I wouldn't call having a playable teaser embryonic, or, you know, coming out and making a very big, you know, very big public deal about having a famous actor attached to it. That just kind of seems, it seems like they're downplaying that to the, you know, to me. Am I wrong?
No, and I wonder how much goodwill has been spent just from, hey, big name directors, big name actors, you will get screwed over if you, you know, get involved in the wrong video game.
Maybe.
Huh.
I mean,
I don't know. I mean, I wonder though how May were. Do you think Fairy May were interested in the first place?
Well, if you believe Twitter, people were pissing and moaning in such a way that I don't actually believe that it could ever live up to anybody's expectation. If they were that sad that it got canceled, I mean, yes, I had high hopes for that thing, but there were people, you know, crying doom and, you know, just like there was rending of garments and or gnashing of teeth going on because of this, which I'm bummed out. Like, this means it's going to be at least like 4 years until we get another Silent Hill game, you know, which I want one very badly.
What was the last Silent Hill game? Was it Homecoming? Shattered Memories.
It would have been Downpour.
Oh yeah.
Downpour in good old 2013. So, which that doesn't feel like 4 years ago. Or sorry, that doesn't feel like 2 years ago. It feels like a lot longer ago.
It feels like 4 years ago.
Yeah, I suppose I really fucked that sentence up.
Well, and so, you played and enjoyed that, right? Like it was kind of a pleasant surprise.
Yeah. And you know what? I've liked a lot of Silent Hill games that a lot of people have considered to be really bad. You know,
well, in general consensus on Downpour was like pretty decent, right?
Yeah, I mean, like the worst anybody called it was mediocre. You know,
sure. Mm-hmm.
So, this is an honest question, not me being snarky. I thought basically all of them except 1 and 2 were generally considered bad.
No. So. The narrative that a lot of people, especially fans of the series, like the people who were like really into 1 and 2 will tell you is that 3 was the last good one. That 4 had a couple of good ideas, but was generally bad. And then the second they took the game out of Japanese hands, that it lost everything that was special to it. And therefore anything that came out from Origins onward was complete irredeemable horseshit, which is categorically not true, although a lot of them were, you know, very flawed, right? Like Origins took the suspense out of the, you know, light world, dark world, nightmare zone transitions or whatever. Homecoming had some ill-advised combat choices. Shattered Memories was fucking great, but it was more of an adventure game than a horror game. And Downpour was a little bit too open for some people's tastes. Like, you know, there are some, you know, legit criticisms that you can make about it. You know, that but the one that people focus on is the original team isn't involved. Therefore, it must be, you know, just the worst possible thing, which is, I don't know. I think that's short sighted.
Sure. I know. And I guess this is coming from like I don't think I've played even a minute of any of the games, so this is entirely outside looking in. It seemed like a lot of the things I heard was that after 3, they started making a lot of like what's happening more explicit, as opposed to in terms of like this is actually this supernatural stuff that's going on and you know what everything means, as opposed to just having it be ambiguous.
No.
Okay. No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like,
that makes sense.
I hate to do that, but it's very clear,
like,
you haven't played
that's
it.
That's legit, because like I literally know nothing about it. That's just kind of the idea I got.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so any series that goes on for that long, especially, you know, something that relates to the horror I'm talking like fucking Bill Cosby here, especially something that is in horror, you know, a lot of something being scary, it really depends on, you know, novelty, right? Like, sure. Oh, I'm scared of this thing because it's unknown, right? Sure. It's the first time that I'm seeing this. And so lot of
the
people
old Lovecraft
who
thing.
Yeah, yeah. Or just in general, like we tend to fear something that we're not familiar with. Right. And so, you know, people who were getting disabused of Silent Hill were saying, oh, this isn't scary to me anymore because, you know, there's always a lighthouse. There's always a man. There's always, you know, whatsoever, you know, like whatever. When in reality, like, yeah, there's always going to be a nightmare zone. There's always nightmare zone. Why am I calling it that? There's always going to be like a nightmare other world. And, you know, there's going to be the misty world. And there are these things that make a Silent Hill game a Silent Hill game. But I think they did a pretty good job of having them articulate in different ways, right?
Sure.
Yeah. So, you know, familiarity breeds contempt.
Sure.
Yeah.
And to be fair, I don't think you ever really get over the fear of being stabbed by, you know, knife-wielding monsters.
No, I mean, the second you realize it's a video game.
Well.
Yeah. What's the most recent Silent Hill game you guys have played? I know, David, you haven't. Shattered Memories, Ben?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
I know, right? Dennis, how about you?
Mine was the very first, because I started going back to it.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know. This is a bummer. And kind of alongside this, they pulled PT down from the store by the time people listen to this. So I would recommend everybody on this show who has a PS4 go and download it as quickly as possible so you can have it, because it's going to be gone forever now.
How does that work when they decide to nuke something like that? Like, people who have it downloaded and are connected to the internet, will it be forcibly pulled off their system? Or?
Oh, I hope not. That would be ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why you should get a PC.
Yeah, stuff can be pulled down from PC as well.
Yeah, it's not like Mac would ever just like randomly, you know, put things on your hard drive.
Yeah. Oh, well. So I'm bummed out about that. I'm not one of those people who is weeping and gnashing teeth on Twitter. If it wasn't meant to be, it wasn't meant to be. At least they, you know, are saying they intend to continue working on it, but Konami kind of doesn't seem to be willing to make anything on consoles. So,
yeah.
Like, was Kojima the entirety of that, the entirety of that division's output? Because think about, like, before that, like, well, like, what's the previous kind of big series or game that they did was Castlevania Lord of Darkness, right? Lord of Shadow? Lords of the Fallen.
Really bad second one.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that series, that would like Kojima oversaw that, right?
I don't know if he was involved with it.
I'm positive he was.
Okay.
Yeah. Womp womp. Anybody else have anything to add about that story?
Not on air.
I'm very sorry, Ben. I put you
no,
in.
No, that's fine.
What? Has there been anything said that this is like endemic to, like, are they also doing layoffs, or is this just we canceled some games?
So this has to do, I believe, the only indications we have, two indications. One is the expurgation of anything related to Kojima from their stuff online, and also the fact that they willingly delisted themselves from the New York Stock Exchange, citing the fact that 96% of their business and trading was done in the Japanese exchange.
Oh, okay.
As far as I know, you know, because they didn't have any studios really rolled up, and, you know, I can only imagine there was some shuffling around, but there hasn't been any like game canceled plus layoffs like you would see with, you know, I guess local development studios. I don't know. Yeah, or domestic ones anyway, here in the U.S. Weird. Ben, how about you? You got a story?
I do. I have one that I wanted to bring in, and then I think I have one that was shot across my bow via the level group.
Yeah.
So, okay. So the one that I had is they released a gameplay trailer for Just Cause 3. Mm. So that looks pretty cool. You can get on the bottom of helicopters and shoot things. So,
oh, you can hang from the rung?
You are hanging upside down from a helicopter. So, you know, like, David, you remember that story of people playing hockey upside down on a sheet of ice in a lake?
Yes. Yes.
It's like that, but with a helicopter and guns.
Wait a minute. So you are...
That makes no sense.
You are standing upside down with your feet touching the bottom of a helicopter?
Yeah, and you are chained, I guess, to the bottom with your, you know, hook claw. But,
yeah, it's Australian rules hockey.
It's Australian rules helicopters?
Well, yeah, because in Australia, you know, they're the southern hemisphere, so the helicopters fly upside down.
Yeah, the rotors go the other way. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. No, I thought you were talking about, I think, everybody's fantasy, which is hanging from the strut of a helicopter with one hand and shooting a machine gun with the other.
Yeah, it's like that, but you have both hands.
I guess, but like, I really think something is lost when you're not hanging on for dear life with one hand and shooting a very large machine gun with the other.
It possibly bother.
At a large
time,
building.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
What if you're like Bionic Commando and you're not so much for dear life so much as you just have like a massive robot claw?
Well, isn't Just Cause basically the spiritual successor? It is open world Bionic Commando, right?
Yeah. Yes, with
freed up hands though.
Yeah.
With more terrorism.
And parachutes.
Yeah. Less wife arms. Fewer wife arms, I'm sorry. The wife arms that are there are no lesser than the ones who came before. Huh. Yeah, that sounds really goofy, but at least they're leaning into it. I got the sense on Just Cause 2 that they made something that they thought would be cool and were a little bit caught off guard by how people received it as this crazy over the top, almost like satire of weird action games.
Well, they had to have known it was over the top when they made it.
I hope so.
They have an Easter egg of a whale that you can blow up with dynamite. Like,
why is that funny? Is the whale alive?
No, it's dead. It's just beached.
Okay, cool.
And that's where you get a collectible like secret token too. So.
Okay, all right. Yeah. So my story is not my interpretation of that is flawed. So I apologize.
I don't know. I just know that simply the highlight reel videos alone justify Just Cause 2.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but at least you're like leaning into it, right? And they have modern systems that can do more stuff like that. Like the fact that every PS4 has a share button kind of makes it custom tailored for this kind of thing, right?
Totally. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Your moments of fun randomness will be captured all the time.
Yeah.
They will not be lost like they were on the PS3.
The whole world is watching.
That's rather creepy.
Sorry, what I said or the way I said it.
I mean, you got to press the share button first.
Some of both. Yeah, it's not like the Kinect that you're always on and, you know, Big Brothering you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's the story that was forced upon you, Ben?
The story that was sent our way was about Batman Arkham Knight, because apparently the game in total will cost $100.
Yeah.
So apparently the split, the regular game, the game proper, will be $60, but the season pass that they're offering for the 6 months after the game's released will cost $40. And so the way it was phrased when it was brought to us is we're asked if we thought that this would be an issue or not. But I'm really not too thrown by this. I'm probably not going to get the $100 version. But I think, I mean, in the past two games, they've been all about like making extra skins and kind of extra add-on missions or like tiny things like that. But with each of the games, they've never been necessary for the story. They've always like had a clear story in the regular game, and then it's extra content in the DLC. Yeah. So I have no reason to believe that they would, you know, gate the entire game behind DLC.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I'm not
too
worried about it.
I guess I'm honestly not clear on this, on how this is any different than a regular season pass. Like I don't price. Like you know, I'm very against companies pulling shenanigans with DLC and stuff like that. But I don't understand, just from reading it, why this is one that people have latched on to.
I think when you think of a season pass for DLC, it's like, hey, will you give me $20 up front for $4 or $5 things? And everyone's kind of like, yeah, okay, fine. And then they decided, like, hey, let's go big. Will you give us $40 up front? And everyone's like, fuck you. So
yeah. Is it just too much?
Maybe it speaks to Cole's $20 limit, you know?
Yeah, that actually very, very sincerely might be it.
Yeah, this is just the psychology of pricing. I think that, you know, so the thing that I've seen people take issue to is less the price, which, you know, if the DLC is good and worth buying, I'm sure, you know, people would gladly pay, you know, $40 over the course of this thing's release, or maybe even more, right, to, you know, to get that stuff if it felt worthwhile and good. However, where this gets hairy and the thing people get upset about or people get upset, is that they're not really saying what is going to be in this season pass.
Okay. Right. That makes sense.
So they're like, you know, they're saying some very vague things, right? So new story missions, additional supervillains invading Gotham City, legendary Batmobile skins, advanced challenge maps, alternative character skins, and new drivable racetracks, which kind of sounds a little bit par for the course with what they did for at least City and Origins, which is like, oh, we have these challenge maps for you to do, which people were generally underwhelmed by.
Oh, thanks.
Right. Yeah. Like it just, and so by calling it story missions or whatever and saying, hey, to get the complete experience here, this is, they're really just kind of crossing their fingers and saying, we hope people will pay us $40 for this thing that nobody knows what it's going to be. Possibly not even us. Like it's straight up a Hail Mary pass to try and get funding up front before people take a look at what they're planning, you know, and decide not to buy it.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I interpret it as that sinister, because I mean, Rocksteady seems to be pretty, I don't know, fair and kind towards their players.
True, but this isn't a Rocksteady move. Like this is a Warner Brothers, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It has to be. Usually, this comes at the publisher level, right? I'm sure that, you know, Rocksteady wasn't that crazy, or you know, didn't put it forward that like, hey, the Catwoman DLC. You know, this really important character in the story, these missions that, you know, let you see the game from that perspective. Let's make this a retailer specific free DLC or free pre-order download. Right. Yeah. Like this is all at the publisher level. So I want to make sure that we're divorcing our goodwill for Rocksteady from what, you know, what can only be a really cynical, you know, I hate to say it, but like cash grab.
Well, yeah, so the weird thing about it is the fact that they're announcing it this early, you know, like, because it seems like if you have something that is that meaty that you want to release, that you would generally wait until, like, the buzz dies down about the base game, you know?
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, they're hoping to get people in that pre-release fervor saying, I'm going to be all about Arkham Knight, you know, for the course of the time that I play it. But after it comes out, they have maybe 2-3 weeks to grab them.
I almost kind of wonder, like, the concept of the season pass is, I think, will go down in history right alongside pre-orders. Mm-hmm. Like the way that, you know, Walking Dead has been done. Fortunately, those were really good games, but I think it kind of started a mentality that will ultimately be recognized as unhealthy for anyone who wants to spend their money wisely and like, don't buy shit before there's any sort of feedback on whether or not, one, it exists, because that's happened before.
Oh, yeah.
And then, two, if it's any good or not.
Mm-hmm. See, that's why I was sort of wondering is if some ways this could be viewed as sort of a kind of pricing Overton window in terms of, like, you know, pushing, you know, the possibility of, like, hey, maybe $60 isn't enough for a game anymore. Let's see if people will be willing to let us charge you more.
It's what fucking Evolve did. Like, it's the exact same thing that Evolve did.
Evolve do?
They did something really similar where they had a great deal of day one DLC, which is fine. Like, I'm not, oh, it's on the disc. Like, you know, I'm not that entitled. But you know, where it got hairy was when somebody high up at the publisher came out and said, you know what, Evolve is a $139 game, and the fact that in order to get the complete Evolve experience or whatever, we're going to charge you, you know, $120 to get this, that's actually a steal, right? And that's some straight up Ken Kutaragi, people will work two jobs to get a PlayStation 3 level horse shit. Like, it feels a little bit delusional. And the fact that the temperature of the room is, hey, this is pretty bad, coupled with the fact that a lot of people are probably going to buy this, kind of gets back down to, you're absolutely right, David. And the, you know, they are trying to figure out what it is. When they were releasing collector's editions of games back in 2004, right at the end of the Xbox One or the first Xbox generation, it's like, hey, you have the regular one for $50. Remember when games cost $50, you guys? And
I'm a PC gamer, kind of. So yes, I do remember that games cost $50.
Yeah, well, that's not the case anymore. But then it's like, oh, we have this tin over here. That was very much a way for them to feel out what was possible and what was fair. And what people don't realize is, okay, that like that there are two things you can do to get that. You know, like to make the money that you need or to preserve the profit that you're trying to get. You can either charge way more and make it back on the bottom line or reduce the top line and release something that is actually, you know, reasonable. And don't fall into the AAA hedonistic treadmill. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's untenable. And the fact that we're seeing that with Evolve and the fact that we're seeing it here. You know, if your game costs $100, by all means, charge whatever it needs to be, but don't pretend like you're doing anybody any favors, or don't, like, you know, voila, do a magician's trick reveal. Just put it out at that price and own it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I agree.
Like Rock Band.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, don't structure things in such a way that you're going to be taking advantage of the people who are most enthusiastic about the thing that you're going to make. Right?
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Yeah. That's one final piece on the article, the actual link that was sent through to us. I just find it, I don't know what the right word is, anthropologically interesting. The survey at the end of the article is kind of entertaining to me, the way that it's set up. Just because fully a third of respondents to the survey, over a third, have said that they will not buy the video game now due to
that's bullshit.
Right? Yeah, and I think it's funny though. Like the entire article is very sarcastic about it, and it's clear that what the author thinks, which that's fine. But then the questions are set up to be essentially like, you know, will you be buying the season pass for $40? And it's like, absolutely, I'm an idiot, or like, no, I'm smart. It's like essentially like not that people wouldn't have answered this way already because they're overreacting on the internet, but very clearly they want the survey to show overwhelming people leaving the franchise.
Yeah.
To be fair, I mean, if people don't, then doesn't that kind of justify this decision in a way?
You still have the option to just buy the regular game.
Yeah,
you
know? and that's the one that I think they're trying to push people towards in this poll. The fact that verbatim the result that people are choosing, you know, 34% of the time here, this has actually made me decide not to buy the game in the first place. Yuck, you know, like that seems to me to be the people who would vote Electronic Arts to be the worst company in the world over Bank of America because of the Mass Effect 3 ending. Like, that to me just sounds like gamer entitlement.
Which, yeah, so yeah, that just, I found it entertaining the way that the article kind of preys on that gamer entitlement.
Yeah, all that I can, well, this is Justin McElroy, so he's going to be funny where he can. But the fact that that's not really dismissive. I like him. If he has an opportunity to phrase things in a funny way, he will do it. There we go. That is more in line with what I actually believe. All right, cool. All I can think of is one of my favorite images on the internet, which is the screenshot of a Steam group, which is Call of Duty Black Ops 2 boycott group or whatever.
Yep. Yeah.
And everybody is online playing Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Yeah. I don't know. Which is fine. The right course of action here: buy the game because it's looking to be really good. Play the main game and then wait for the good stuff to go on sale, or buy it a la carte. Like, I think that this is straight up some like European vacation pig in a poke horse shit.
Yep.
What?
It's a, you know what? I'm not even, there's
homework assignment.
There are so many steps required to get you to understanding that I don't feel like walking you down that road. I am so super sorry.
If Bill Gates drops $5, he should keep on walking.
Yep. Oh man. Oh man. I'm excited about this game though.
Yeah. It'll probably be good. They haven't made a bad game yet.
Yeah. Was that a sarcastic cough, Dennis? Okay. And David, how about you? You got a story?
Yeah. So apparently, I believe it was earlier this week, Steam announced that they're going to be allowing now paid mods for Skyrim. Paid mods were already a feature for, I guess, Steam games, and then mods themselves have been in Steam for a while now. But adding the option to actually pay for the mods on Skyrim apparently caused a huge kerfluffle on the interwebs, particularly on the Reddits.
Yeah, it caused a huge entitlement backlash.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I guess one of the more unfortunate things, I feel like to a certain degree, maybe Valve should have seen this one coming. But I guess they kind of, found several modders that wanted to, were interested in doing this. They're interested in, setting up their mods as products and sort of had them, worked with them to have them kind of be the figureheads. Here are the people that are leading the charge.
Yeah, the benchmark. Here's the high water mark of what we think a paid mod should look like.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. Which I mean, I feel like they should have known that that's basically the same as saying here's the people to send all your death threats to.
So let's put this at the top. Do you guys think paid mods good thing or bad thing? High level.
I'm a capitalist.
I think it's a good thing because people don't have to make their stuff free, or people don't have to make it paid. It's they're not saying everything needs to be that. Like if something needs to be paid or free, it can happen, right?
Okay, so I'm good thing as well.
Long as it's optional, as long as it's not forced paid, then yeah, I think it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I would maybe go a step further and say like. I don't know. I'm a little bit like upset about all the whole like you don't own the software in your car, you're just renting it, you can't mod the software, and all these sorts of copyright decisions that have been made. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I kind of dislike the fact that here's finally a company saying, you can mod our product and, do whatever you want with it, and then they get a backlash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so there are two separate things going on here, and we should probably address them both separately. The first of which is there are people in the modding community who are angry for how little of a cut the actual creator takes.
Right? Okay. Yeah. And I think that's probably reasonable.
Yeah. So under the terms from before the plug was pulled on this, the creator, the person who actually made the mod, was only getting 25% of the gross, right?
But it would vary game by game. So that was the split for Skyrim specifically.
Yes. And so that ended up being Bethesda, wanted a bigger cut, right?
Sure. Did they say how much Bethesda got?
So Steam's usual cut off of anything is 30% off the top. Mm-hmm. So, Bethesda was getting something along the lines of 45% of anything that was sold related to plug into their games, which is bad, right? That's a pretty big cut of the pie, which if the publishers are going to endorse people getting money for derivative products of their own work, you're not going to get around them, wanting to get some kind of cut off of it. I don't think that.
Sure.
I think that it's possible that the people who made Skyrim are they should get some of that money, right? Because otherwise it wouldn't be there. They're facilitating. It's part of their platform, and they have as much claim to that as Steam does for the Steam Workshop being the platform, for facilitating that for facilitating the transaction.
Yeah, I would say I think that's true. Although I don't know. I almost feel like it would have been nice if maybe they did some sort of kind of progressive taxation type of thing. You know, kind of realize that, you know, your average modder is going to make so little total profit that 25% maybe isn't enough to, you know, have the kind of market incentive they hope it would have.
Yeah, like it wouldn't actually make it worth their while to even charge for this.
Right, yeah. Right. So I feel like maybe it would have been better to, do something where, like, you know, it's, you make, you know, I don't know, 40% up to the first however much money you get, and then after that you make whatever percent, or, you know, something like that.
Mm-hmm. And some people propose that sort of solution as well online, but I would be much more comfortable if they did something similar to, like, Humble Bundle, where they put it, you know, to the user to divvy up where they want to pay, mm-hmm. you know, like how much would go to Valve, how much would go to developer, how much would go to the modder.
Yeah.
Yeah, I always feel kind of weird doing that on Humble Bundle.
You don't like the Humble Tip?
The Humble Tip?
Yeah, that's the category of what goes to the Humble Bundle people.
No, I mean it's more I know, like I feel a weird tension between, like, my desire to support the people that created this product and my desire to, like, give money to charity.
Yeah, dude, just double down.
Yeah, I mean, like go with your gut, like, go with what feels right.
Yeah, I know. I'm just saying that always seems weird. Is something that feels weird to me. So I think I always do, like, a completely even split.
I just always leave it at the default, honestly. And so
which that, I think that is the default. I could be wrong.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, we did kind of mention, but, you know, the other thing that does, you know, maybe should be said, just because it's such a perennial problem. So I feel like it's worth pointing it out, when it happens. So hopefully it gets better, is the fact that, you know, apparently the people who have elected to sell their games, so, you know, getting the normal, you know, death threats and harassment, yeah, and stuff like that.
And that's the other side of it. So if part one is the fact that, you know, you have the guy who made Gary's Mod coming out and saying it seems like somebody's being a greedy asshole in the middle of this, which I think is a reasonable take on this. The other side of it is people who don't believe that, you know, that these creators should have any right to charge for their stuff at all.
Yeah, it's a very sad litmus test for me. Like, is internet culture getting any better? Categorically, no.
Well, like,
I feel like to be, like, I don't know, completely biased, I feel like it, there are, like, a couple of sides to this, in as my, like, a couple of ways to look at this. Yeah, I feel like clearly the people who are, like, actually, you know, making death threats or harassing people, aka are doing things that are illegal, are mm-hmm. in the wrong.
Yeah, and I feel like if there's one takeaway for listening to the show, it's don't make death threats.
Yeah, right, exactly. Which, exactly.
If you weren't getting that moral from everywhere else in your fucking life, then I don't know, maybe reevaluate.
You should binge on the show, maybe. Yeah.
We don't do morals anymore.
I can hold on, and that for our next of the year awards, Odie awards, that's going to be my unpopular opinion of the year. Do not make death threats.
So the other side of this is probably the people who say modding is something that is that is done genuinely out of enthusiasm, and mod culture is kind of along the lines of any other kind of, you know, do the work and the information wants to be free, open source kind of thing. Make that happen. So I'm not sympathetic to that point of view. However, people who genuinely hold that point of view should be really, really angry that the people who want the same end result, which is no way for mod creators to be paid at all, should be as angry as possible in trying to speak around them, or, you know, separating themselves from them to make their point somewhere else anew.
Right. I guess where I was kind of going is, like, I can, although I don't agree with it, like, on some level, I can respect someone that just, you know, straight up and purely philosophically, like, doesn't think that you should be allowed to charge for mods. You know, I can understand that, you know, and kind of respect that, even though, you know, like I said, you know, I'm a capitalist. I don't necessarily agree with that. Mm-hmm. I feel like the one that really worries me is I feel like there's a certain degree of kind of a, I don't know, almost, you know, we want to pull other people down to our level. You know, I can't be successful selling my mods, or I can't buy mods, therefore I don't want anyone else to, you know, make
nobody
make
wants to buy my
business.
Furry sex mod for Skyrim. No one else should be able to make money on Skyrim.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's okay. I'm not going to guys, I'm not going to turn this into a conversation about Gamergate. I'm not going to turn this into a just please, just don't let me do it.
Where's the multiplayer break?
No, but I think that you're hitting something right on the fucking head, David, which is a lot of criticism and a lot of, you know, stuff that happens on the internet, like where people are saying it's a certain amount of sour grapes. It feels sure. like that's the, you know, that's my side of it. I don't think this person, you know, I don't think this person doing their thing, is keeping me from being able to do my thing. Okay. I don't have the recognition that I need because this person who is, you know, going about their business and doing the thing that I want to do is taking my spot. So therefore we need to change the temperature in the room so much that they are pushed out of it as quickly as possible by changing the baseline set of rules that everything is evaluated against or changing the rules of the game. They're kind of salting the earth and saying, well, now nobody can have X, Y, or Z. Not recognizing sure. that, you know, even in a complete even in a complete vacuum of, you know, meritocracy, not everybody, you know, like that their thing probably still wouldn't rise to the top just because of, you know, the whole 99 and one rule, right? Like the ones are making the most money, the nine is going to be making a whole bunch, and like 90% of it is going to be a whole bunch of shit. Like those, right. you know, let's add a vagina to these horses mod, which I shit you not, is a thing that happens in Oblivion and, you know, Skyrim or whatever. We want these horses to have vaginas on the back of them.
Good. Fantastic.
Way to go, Internet.
Yep.
So I do think one of the valid concerns with this, though, is the quality control issue, where once you, if you have a paid mod and somebody downloads it and it's just, like, broken and there's no quality control for it, I think, I mean, that's definitely like an issue that mm-hmm. would need to be worked out if they made like forced paid mods. But
yeah. And at that point it becomes incumbent upon Steam to make it as easy as possible for people to discover the stuff that is good and for the dross to kind of fall off to the wayside.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, and I don't know, I feel like, I wonder if, you know, especially since Steam, It seems like maybe, you know, an intelligent thing to do would be to consider putting in, like, some sort of, you know, brief refund window.
Oh, yeah.
You know, especially since, you know, the fact that, you know, I could play Skyrim for free over the weekend and then suddenly it disappears from my computer means that, you know, apparently they can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, they did that with Xbox Live indie games. They had a more relaxed refund window period because of those, or, you know, because of the perceived lack of quality among those. And as time bore out, actual lack of quality in the majority of those. But that gets to the bigger point that I want to make. And I'm sorry if it feels like I've been dominating the conversation.
No, this
makes me very angry to read about this. Like, modding is a form of independent development. Okay. And
okay.
So far up to this point, modding has either been you go in there and you mess around with this until you learn how to make your own game, or you make such a good mod that you are bought up by a bigger studio and you go on to make their own thing. Right? So in this case, if modders are just out there making their own content and getting their ideas in there because that is the most expedient way to do the thing that they want to do because they're passionate about the way this game works or, you know, something about it speaks to them, if we're closing every single door to them being able to fruitfully pursue that, then there's just a whole bunch of development that isn't going to happen.
So I think an apt analogy is filmmaking, right? You can have directors who care about the artistic integrity of their movie, and you have directors who care just about the bottom line. Mm-hmm. But both can be enjoyed by audience members. But I think the key is that when you go to a theater and you pay for a ticket, you get a complete movie. The quality of it, you know, might be, you know, good or bad, but you're getting something that's complete in a sense, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think as long as they moderate that, then I think it's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the potential for this is, okay, this is Cole's super cool mod, and then when you load it up, it takes you to a completely blank map that just has a cube that rotates in front of it, and then it slowly transforms into a pyramid, and then over the course of a couple of minutes, transforms back into a cube as it goes along.
Wait, wasn't that Monuke game with the what's in the box?
Yeah, what's in the cube? Yeah, Cole's super awesome mod. It is a cube that turns into a pyramid and back again. Yeah.
10 out of 10 would buy again.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we read your answers to a question that Dennis put out there. Dennis, what was the question?
Yeah, my question was about the funniest or cleverest, which might be most clever, I'm not sure, but the funniest trolling that you've seen in online games. So I posted the video to my favorite, but I'll get to that eventually.
Yeah. Let's see here. I'm going to get us started out with Sean Petrie saying, in World of Warcraft, telling / hearing about people telling new players that if you type in / camp, it sets up a tent and a fire pit, where in reality, it logs you out of the game.
What? Excuse me, man. What is that an abbreviation for?
Oh, yeah, like the
why would camp do that?
I think that's a holdover from the multi-user dungeon days from the MUDs.
Okay.
So, like, the idea is you're setting up camp for the night and, like, logging out?
Yeah, yeah. It's like saying we out.
Oh, okay. Huh.
Gotcha. Okay.
They had to know that was going to be abused.
Well, maybe.
I think it was sort of kind of what Cole said. It was sort of a thing where, like, if you play EverQuest, like, it was pretty hardcore. Like, we're just going to straight up translate a pen and paper game to a video game, like to the point where mm-hmm. like you had to learn other players' language just by like exposure.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like things you typed would be gargled. Like they had a lot of weird features, and World of Warcraft was sort of in intermediary in that, like it was mostly like new and actually well put together, but every so often you'd find something that has a holdover.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like you'll still see this sometimes where, you know, somebody will ask a question like, how do I do so and so? And the person will fire back and say, OK, press Alt F4.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or like on Linux, you know, the answer, RM-RF. Solves all problems.
Yeah, which erase your disk? Is that what that does?
Yeah, that's erase everything on my computer without asking me.
Yeah, and people have been shot for less.
Yeah, well, yeah, as the internet do.
Huh, let's see here. Ben, what does David say?
David says, back in EverQuest in the first expansion starting area in Kunark, there was a high-level tower right next to the newbie area. There was no quest tracker or !! Icons over the NPCs, and it was common to say the person you needed to talk to for the next stage of the newbie quest was in that tower.
Yeah, I think he's talking about the Field of Bone.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, the Kunark expansion had some really great area names.
Nice.
Yeah. So, go ahead.
Sorry, I was / am going to tangent hardcore into EverQuest. Mm-hmm. I never completed a single quest in EverQuest. Were there actually like missions in that?
Yeah, there were like fetch quests kind of things.
Okay, I was just like grouped up with people and like killed people that I vaguely had no idea why they were actually my enemy.
Yeah, like it was a lot of stuff to like get you through to raid content and things like that, or like class-based item stuff.
All right.
Yeah, you'd have to do it by trying to figure out the fucking inscrutable dialogue system in that game, though, by typing keywords.
Tail.
Yep. Go ahead, Dennis.
Oh, I was going to move on to the next one.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep. So Glenn says, in Super Mario 3D World for Wii U, you can pick up and toss fellow players. My friends and I saw this as a good time to troll each other by tossing each other off the maps. And I concur, you can do that in New Super Mario Bros. Wii as well. I think everything from then on added that in.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's pretty good. I think that's kind of built into the play as well. Like they kind of take that into account. They are going to do it. That it's going to be co-opetition.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like Four Swords, the Zelda game. You know, had some similar features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. David, what's Jacob say?
Jacob says butterfly set.
Do you want me to translate?
Yeah, by which I assume that means he like sets his butterfly on people and like the butterfly goes and like viciously attacks them.
Nobody suspects the butterfly. Oh, the Simpsons. Yeah, so the butterfly set, it is a set of armor you can get in Dark Souls 2 that that when you wear it, it kind of off-gasses poison.
Okay.
So as you're running around, it has some good effects to it. Like you can do a double jump essentially with it, which is really neat. But moreover, you look like a butterfly, and more accurately, you look like one of the Monarch's henchmen from the Venture Brothers, which is great. But just the idea that you can wear something that puts a permanent poison AOE on you is something that isn't so much great for PvP because you know you can adjust for that. However, when you're invading or, you know, inside somebody's world or even in your own world, the butterfly set will poison and kill NPCs.
Yeah.
Which... And then From Software learned their lessons and would never use ambient and poison AoEs on a boss in Bloodborne again.
No, this is just a weirdo Fashion Souls thing. Don't worry about it. Bloodstar Beast is still there.
effing Bloodstarved Beast.
Yeah. I'm not keeping track who hasn't gone yet. Oh, we've gone through four of them. Why don't we do ours? Dennis, explain this thing that you put in here, the dam at the troll.
Yeah, it's an amazing Dark Souls 1 invasion counter, I guess I'll call it. Although how many times this person has done this, I have no idea before it was actually captured, because it's the invader capturing it. Mm-hmm. But invader jumps into the world, and as he's running up, he's in the ruins, which is a place that like has ledges above a giant lava pit, like you do in video games. But as he's running in there, he gets a message from the person he's invading that says, "Are you a cleric?" Which is a question you get from an NPC in the game named Patches. And Patches's thing. My name ends with S. I should not be surprised by that.
Yeah, it's a unique curse.
It sounds weird. Anyway, Patches's thing is just that he is like, I don't know, compulsively or what exactly the motivation is, but he kind of double crosses you and kicks you down into pits. That's like his thing, his shtick.
Everyone needs a hobby.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, he gets this message, and it's a question from Patches. So he responds like, "Oh, no, I'm not a cleric. What are you talking about?" And then he says, "Oh, well, I have no problem showing you the treasure then," and runs over to this thing he's dropped on the ground. And the person runs along and is like, "Oh, okay, I get it. It's like a cosplay. This is really cute." And picks up the thing and is promptly backstabbed and kicked down into the pit of lava.
Yep. Like,
you should have seen this coming 6 million miles away. Like it's in hindsight, it is so obvious. Of like, I don't know what I expected.
The way you phrased that made it sound like From should have seen this coming and not put that armor in the game.
Oh, No, I'm very glad that they did. Because it was hilarious to see executed.
Yeah. Literally executed, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, but just role-playing as an NPC from the game. and still falling for it. And the item, so when you pick up an item in Dark Souls, whether or not you die, it stays in your inventory. I believe in this video it ends up being like a piece of rubbish or something like that.
It's a great arrow, a single great arrow.
Oh yeah. Yep. So not even anything good. Like, just give them a little something for their trouble. Throw them a slab, you know?
Yeah. if you are doing this level of stuff in Dark Souls, you have no need of any of the items in the game. You can afford to give someone a nice little bonus for being duped.
This is trolling on the level of, like, you've circled around from just like, hey, I want to be a dick, to I'm an agent of whimsy bringing magic into people's days.
Exactly. Which is kind of what I feel like this sort of thing should be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
AKA, like, what this thing will be if you're not a sociopath.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there's three levels to trolling, I think. And the results are either they're mad at you, and then it gets a little bit better, and like, oh, they're amused and happy with you. And then it gets even better, and it's like they're mad at how happy they are with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you phrase it in the question, like, admit it, you're just angry because you didn't think of it.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, like, we got called out on that for, you know, some of our attitudes on PvP and Bonfires at Chat. Like, you know, we were accused of endorsing bullying.
Huh.
Like, so somebody wrote in and said, like, your guys' kind of blasé attitude about doing invasions, you know, like, why would you go and make a bad experience worse? And it's like, well, you know, it's something new and something different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. I have no use for PvP trolling style PvP, you know, something like that where it is explicitly, you know, playful doesn't bother me, but I don't know. I have no use for any sort of gameplay where it's my entertainment revolves around hurting other people.
Sure. I think the weird assumption in that is that the From needs to somehow fundamentally alter the structure and ecosystem of their games to make, you know, someone's life easier.
Which they did with Dark Souls 2.
Yeah.
See, I've heard the exact opposite on Dark Souls 2.
They made invasion PvP really, really hard to do and offloaded most of it to arena play.
Okay.
I know. The form of PvP that is, you know, I don't know. Like I said, basically getting entertainment from hurting other people. I don't know. I think those people should be sent, you know, psychopathy tests.
that's a bit harsh. Like, it's just a game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think games are a microcosm of life.
See, I wouldn't liken Dark Souls to bullying, though, because you have a choice to play the game. You know, like, whereas if you were being bullied in real life, you don't really have a choice as existing. You know what I mean? Like, so, yeah, I don't know.
So I'll go ahead and throw in mine, and this might inform at least a little bit of my attitude towards these kind of things, because this was fucking masterful with how much of a dick move it was. in EverQuest, on the Rallus Zek server, where I would go and slum it. That was the server that had PvP with no level, limit, and I believe that they could loot your corpse when they killed you.
Oh wow!
Okay, like, this is straight up just the worst kind of PvP you could do. And so, you know, because there's no level limit, people could just swoop by and, you know, kill you when you're just a level one gnome, like, starting out. And so what people would do, at least, you know, around the time that I was playing, they would make a name that was nothing but a combination of uppercase I's, lowercase I's, and lowercase L's, so that it was a barcode. Okay. And so if you were trying to, like, you know, so this guy, he was like, yeah, that's his name. comes up and kills you, and you're trying to say like, hey dude, that's a dick, or warn people there's somebody in the area named so and so, because their name is just a barcode, you can't actually do it. Like, they just run up and you see x y blah, 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 and they make it so hard to even do it, so they may as well just be a glitch in the system that comes in and rains down retribution. And this was before any kind of like modern convenience of clicking on somebody's name in order to like send them a tell or, you know, do anything like that, or do a whisper, right? And so and so doing this effectively made you invisible for PvP.
Well, that's amazing, because, well, I don't know, how easy was it to change your character's name? Because in my mind, that implies you had the idea to do this, created that character, and then leveled it up enough that you could then go back and troll. Well, like, that is some long con shit.
Yep. Yeah.
Wait, so someone who's willing to spend hours upon hours of monotonous gameplay, which requires them to themselves deal with this sort of crap,
yeah,
just so they can hurt other people? Yep, psychopathy test.
No, like, CEOs are psychopaths. Like, this is just funny. Like, it just, like, you, to a certain degree, you have to admire the dedication.
I agree to disagree. There's nothing I admire about that.
Yeah. How about you, David? You got a favorite example?
Sure. Originally in World of Warcraft, when it launched, the factional combat worked is, you know, you could attack any NPC that was a member of another faction, of the other faction, mm-hmm. and, you know, and kill them, and in so doing, you know, you would be flagged as PvP, and you know, players of the other faction that were in the area would be alerted to your presence. And so that was sort of, you know, that was the way, like, most large scale world PvP would happen, would be, you know, you would start, you know, working your way towards your you know, the other faction's main cities, you know, kind of pillaging in the process.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of people enjoyed that, particularly people who you know, didn't want to deal with the psychopaths on PvP servers but still cared about PvP. You know, that was kind of their way to do it. But, you know, one of the unfortunate side effects of that was it kind of sucked to be someone just trying to play PvE and coming back to town and finding all the person you have to turn in your quest to had been killed.
Mm-hmm.
So the way they addressed that is eventually instituting, you know, they had the honor system, which is, you know, a currency that they reward you with for, you know, doing well in PvP, and killing these basically like protected NPCs, which was generally like merchant and quest givers, you know, would give you dishonorable kills. And the problem is that effectively killed you know, world PvP on non-PvP servers. So I had one friend who, you know, world PvP was his thing. So he simply decided to, you know, he simply ignored the fact that this rule change had ever been made. So at one point, yeah, I was in a guild with him. I was looking through the guild roster, and one of the things that lists is, you know, number of dishonorable kills. I'm reading through the roster, and, you know, it's, you know, 3 dishonorable kills, 5 dishonorable kills, because you'd get them, you know, accidentally sometimes, you know, 10 dishonorable, 2, etc. And then I get to his, it's like 1,132 dishonorable kills.
A lot of accidents.
Well, I mean, so that kind of comes down to a big problem, right? Dishonor is only a deterrent if people care about honor.
Right. And like, I think theoretically, you know, the game punished you for it, but was a certain degree to which, like, you know, his point was to do the fighting in general, not so much to get the reward for the fighting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and, you know, he was just kind of, you know, heck if the game's going to tell me how to play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I do want to give just briefly a quick shout out to some of the things that, was it Goonfleet tends to do in games. Particularly, I really enjoy the fact that when they kind of will come in and set up their kind of mafia cartels, that they actually, you know, run their protection rackets as actual protection rackets, where they truly do, you know, protect the merchants in their territory and, you know, rub out competitors and stuff like that. So that makes my day.
So that level of dedication and kind of just the amount of resources and time that they're putting into it doesn't trip off your psychopathy. The second it becomes an institution, it's fine.
No, I would say I think the difference is that those rules, the difference is the fact that, you know, if at least from what I've observed, generally speaking, if you play by the rules, you know, average people don't get hurt.
I don't know,
numb, dude.
You know, it's the, you know, if you pay your protection money, then you live in the safest, you know, you live in the safest neighborhood in New York.
I don't know. that doesn't resonate for me.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Hmm. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, so I was trying to think of examples of trolling. I mean, the closest I can get is playing multiplayer with friends or playing games online, but I really don't have a concrete example. Yeah, mostly it involves just, like, really good kills, like in multiplayer games, but it's not exactly trolling, so
mm-hmm.
I'm kind of striking out on this one.
Like, any, like, is there... Good.
I was going to say, have you ever had anyone, like, single you out in a Halo match or anything like that and be like, okay... My life is now about getting Ben.
Not that I recall.
Really?
I know.
Man, you've never had like a game when everyone, where it becomes like a massive battle between the people running knife sets and everyone else?
In Halo?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm really tired. I was thinking Call of Duty. I'm going to sleep now.
No, I mean, that works too. I played that a whole bunch, but yeah. No.
So no, like, I'm sorry? Especially creative or dickish kills.
Yeah, I mean, there's creative kills. Like, in Call of Duty, if you throw the package drop near somebody and have your package drop kill them, that, I guess that's a good example of
there
trolling.
There we go. Awesome. Yep. Yeah, that's the stuff. That's the sauce daddy likes.
That's sort of like, what was it, Battlefield 2? The commander could drop... you could airdrop jeeps on people, mm-hmm. so it became known as cartillery.
Yeah, or if you were playing as a medic, you could use your paddles as a melee weapon for instant kill, which essentially turned mm-hmm. them into Jigglypuff. Yep, it was first person Jigglypuff. Yeah.
Wait. How is that Jigglypuff?
Like in Smash Brothers, Jigglypuff's taunt or singing
one hit.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Or like going to sleep will do a one hit. There we go.
Yeah. Down yeah, B okay. One hit. Up B is singing.
Yeah. Let's see here. Let's get back to the responses that people sent in. Yeah. So Phil Holmes says, one time I was playing DayZ and I came across this guy who was being shot at. We both escaped, but I was wounded, so he helped me get patched up, gave me food, and started running with me. Then he dropped a backpack for me, and when I went to pick it up, he shot me in the head. Yep.
I have not played or really watched any video of DayZ, but the stories I hear coming out of it, just it has almost like this impossibly legendary status in my mind as this real dystopian... set up where everyone's just dicking everyone over constantly.
Yeah, I can't even watch videos of it. It looks so dull. I'm like, if I know that there is joy to be had in it, just based on those same stories that I've heard. But like, I'm very content to hear stories like this because Phil's experience just sounds great. I'm going to let you live as long as you're useful to me, and then I'm going to dispatch you in a way that reduces as much risk to me as possible. Yeah, that's that's some good stuff.
It's not even trolling. That's just life.
Yeah,
in the wasteland
out there in the concrete jungle. You know. let's see here, Ben. What's Allison say?
Allison says, "My favorite will always be Ouroboro, the ninja in Dark Souls, who killed Shiva in this game. Spoiler alert! And then dressed up in his armor and weaponry, and then just stood motionless in Shiva's spot, waiting for forest invaders to walk by him, completely clueless."
Yep.
Okay, now that's the type of trolling I can get behind. That's actually creative.
Yeah, pretending to be part of the scenery or something like that. Like, you know, just finding somebody who has killed Shiva and pretending to be him. Yeah, like just go for it.
Yeah, I think because we've clearly touched a very interesting nerve on trolling, what's acceptable, what's not, and what the motivation is. I think where I'm coming down on it is it's almost the motivation of the person doing it. Is the quote unquote pain caused to the player? Well, first off, I think, you know, material pain, like, are you destroying someone's save file? Okay, that's not okay. Or like the sword that would, in Dark Souls that people would mod so that it completely de-levels you and whatever. Mm-hmm. But you know, so is the objective or the motive of the person playing to do something interesting, and the griefing of the player is kind of a byproduct of wanting to try abusing the rules in an interesting way, for example. Mm-hmm. Or like, I wonder if I could get this to work, or I wonder if someone would fall for that. Or is the player's motivation, I want to hurt people, and this is the most expedient way I can do it.
I mean, there has to be something in between, because when I do invasion PvP, and, you know, quite frankly, I don't do it as much anymore, but the idea is, like, there is something interesting about a fight that is asymmetrical. There's something interesting about, like, okay, I'm fighting you because I want to fight you. It doesn't even matter to me that, like, this is causing you any kind of distress. All that matters is you're going about your business and I'm here. We're going to fight. We're going to, you know, get into this fight no matter what. I could just be a regular NPC invader. Like, that could be a thing. But no, mm-hmm. I'm an actual dude and you're an actual dude and we're going to fight, and you're going to fight in a different way because you are trying to hold on to something or trying to maintain something. And if you win, guess what? You're going to feel amazing. And if I win, you know what? That's a story that you have. Right.
Or if you're playing me, I'm just going to pull the internet cable.
Well, yeah, but that, like, and then I'm going to be angry, and you may as well have used the D-res or whatever, whatever those mods are that give me an, you know, infinite curse or whatever, because that is psychopathy. Like, I wanted to have a fight and you took that fight away from me.
Well, it's like the early seasons of MMA. It's like no one knew how this is going to turn out stepping into the ring. Like, there's just such wild differences in style and you know, preparedness and all this stuff. Whereas I feel like that's unique and can only last for a short amount of time. Like, it's ephemeral in these games, because eventually everything is codified and this is the right build to invade with, and you always bow before you start fighting and blah, 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 blah.
The bowing. But fuck the bowing.
Yeah, there's something very special and exciting about this. Again, completely aside from causing someone grief or not, there's something very exciting about stepping into an arena where you have no idea what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm. Sure. And to be fair, I generally speaking, like most of the just straight Dark Souls invading actually doesn't bother me that much, because it is very much a part of the game and is controlled. You know, other than, you know, some of the things I've read, you know, people explicitly trying to abuse the rules, stuff like that. I would say, on the whole, Dark Souls PvP is not real high on my griefers that I dislike thing. Mm-hmm. But
sure.
Yeah.
I think, you know, kind of an example of, like, what really puts... kind of puts a bad taste in my mouth that maybe I tend to project on the whole thing is, you know, I've read people like early days, PvP, any PvP, even non-consensual PvP in World of Warcraft, you know, doesn't damage your gear. And so, you know, I've seen people discussing, you know, where the way they did PvP is basically they would purposely stun people underwater, because if they drowned, that count as a non-PvP kill, and then their gear got damaged and they had to repair it. Mm-hmm. So, like, that sort of thing where it's very explicitly, like, it only counts if I hurt the other person is really what kind of turns me off of all of it.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, I could say that.
Yeah.
Now, I think there's something to, hey, I wonder if I could kill someone by stunning them underwater. Mm-hmm. That's
valid. Yeah, yeah. Because, like that happening, and like, I know. Yeah, because it's kind of a thing. Because like, if that happened to me like once, it would probably be like an awesome story I would tell.
Yeah, you know but if there's someone who's like, this is my thing, I kill people underwater because it's the only way I can feel.
They call me Jack the Dripper.
Yeah. There's the title.
Let's see here. David, why don't you get the next one?
Jeremy Greer says, if you can get past the overly raw intro, this video of someone conning a host into believing there's a secret treasure in the sewer is pretty great.
Yep.
Nice. So should I watch the video, or can someone explain to me? Is this getting someone to jump down a bottomless pit?
It's not so much a bottomless pit, but getting somebody to walk willingly into the basilisk.
Oh, okay.
Yep. So, oh man. Yeah, it's a pretty good video. Just because it's a combination of the Wrath of God, like the force push spell kind of thing, and just kind of general social engineering and emoticons to get somebody to get cursed. It's pretty funny.
Cool.
Yeah. And then finally, Dennis, what's Evan say?
Evan says the funniest was in iRacing, a hardcore PC racing sim. In iRacing, you have to constantly drive safely to advance to more fun and difficult racing classes and keeping true to high school fight punishments. Huh? Oh, okay. So like it makes sense. You gotta walk before you. Oh, and keeping true to high school fight punishments. Got it. Yeah. I thought it was a period. Everyone in a collision is penalized no matter who started it. In the very last, that's a great idea. In the very last lap of a clean 45-minute rookie race, the guy in last place turned sideways and started ramming the race leaders who were lapping him off the track right before the finish line. Oh no.
Now nobody gets a win.
Yeah, this must rob them of an extremely hard-fought victory and damage their safety rating, damning them to a few more races in the rookie leagues before they could move on up. Hopefully 2 minutes is late is good enough. It totally is. Sorry, that's an extra piece.
Yeah, this kind of reminds me of, to do kind of the other extreme, the original Planet Side had sort of anti basically things designed to punish griefers. So if you got hit by a car, it assumed that you were trying to troll the person in the car and would punish the person that got hit.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, although on the other hand, it also had a problem with, like, it would punish you if you friendly fired, and people would routinely just walk in front of your, like, fully automatic machine gun fire. So, yeah. So, yeah, I can definitely see this. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I've heard of iRacing.com before in a professional context, but... I had not heard of anybody actually playing it.
Yeah, I'd never heard of it before, so that's interesting.
Yeah. Awesome. So thank you, everybody, for responding. Why don't we go ahead and do the grind after I say how you can respond in the future. Go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for those questions to go up on Tuesday afternoons. Let's keep moving, guys.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we've been playing here recently. I'm going to do mine real quick. I've been playing Tetris, by which I mean fitting a lot of boxes into very little amount of space. And then reverse Tetris.
I thought you were serious.
No. And then reverse Tetris, where I take those boxes and then put them into a bigger space. Reverse Tetris is a lot easier.
Brick Breaker or whatever?
I don't know. Is it Breakout? I haven't played a lot of hand...
Breakout, reverse Tetris.
I've been playing a lot of racquetball in my apartment. Yeah, but I haven't been playing anything of note because I've been too busy moving. So there we go. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next.
Ben.
Oh, all right. Fine.
Sorry, because I don't have too much. I've continued playing Alien Isolation. I know I've talked about this for a few weeks in a row now. I got past the part that I was stuck at 2 weeks ago and progressed through several missions, and now I'm stuck at another part. But I'm about halfway through the game. I'm less... I guess I'm still on the fence about it because I got past the one hump and then I felt pretty okay with the game and like how they were treating like hiding and stuff and how you could get around and navigate around the alien. But then they give you a flamethrower, which is really nice because you can shoot that at the alien and then that like kind of makes that an easier experience. But then I ran out of flamethrower fire. So now it's back to being...
You ran out of fire
juice? It's back to being a hard game. Huh. Yeah. And so now I'm at another tough part. So I just restarted the mission that I was on. So, you know, it's okay. But it made me go back and watch the movies or video games or
I mean, how many xenomorphs are there in the game?
There, I think there's just one so far. So
okay, so flamethrowing it is not a lethal option.
It is a temporary solution, yeah. It just scares him sometimes. Sometimes he charges right through that fire. But, yeah.
That seems like that kind of defeats the purpose of flamethrower.
Yeah, it, you know, you gotta be quick on the trigger, man. You can't pull a Braveheart and hold until the last second. But, yeah, I don't know. So, I mean, I still have similar frustrations with the game, though, where, like, there's a lot of dying in the game. And, like, there's a lot of restarts in the game, and it kind of takes you out of the experience, you know? Like, the environment's really detailed, and it's really well done. But, yeah, that is kind of one of the drawbacks of the game, is it's really hard to get into the story when you have to consistently keep restarting and then trying to find a way to get around the alien.
So, is it sort of a thing, you know, it seems like sometimes these games, it's kind of the point of the game is, like, can I, you know, testing, you know, can I survive this? And, like, at some point when the answer becomes too obviously no, the game sort of loses its purpose. Is it kind of that sort of thing?
I mean, I guess it's definitely not as challenging as Dark Souls, but, like, it has a similar approach where... I guess I don't know how to describe it. Like, it doesn't have the satisfaction of like Hitman. Usually I'm really patient with games like Hitman or Metal Gear because I know that the game guarantees a path that you can travel through. And it's like just a matter of figuring out what the right path is through observation. Whereas with this game, since the alien kind of randomly appears at different places, kind of appears at different frequencies. I don't have the same feeling where it's like, okay, there's a way to get through this. Sometimes it's just like, well, this kind of sucks. You know, like he's spawning very frequently in this area and I am running out of ammo. So I don't know. It's, yeah, it can be frustrating at times.
I mean, you've never played Amnesia, have you?
I've played parts of it.
Okay. Because what you're describing is Amnesia.
Okay. I would say I've played maybe 2 hours of Amnesia.
Okay.
So I've seen some of things.
I thought Amnesia was pretty Heidi.
Well, so is this. Like,
oh, is it? Okay.
Yeah, this is Heidi and Running Man Wrong.
I don't know what Heidi is. What is Heidi?
Like you.
Having the quality of hiding.
Yes, like the game encourages you to find a place where you're out of sight.
Excuse me. Sorry, I thought you were saying height-y with, like, whatever. Width and height, whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
I guess.
No, there's a lot of locker camping out in Alien Isolation, so.
I guess what I meant was, my understanding was that Amnesia Kai kept things on a fairly tight loop.
A little bit. This is, you know, this definitely expands on it from what I've seen and what I've read. But then again, I haven't played it. I just wanted to make sure that the similarity was noted.
So, okay, and I've even turned the difficulty down to the easiest difficulty to just try and focus on playing the story and not on playing the game. But even with that, like, I still run into the same problem. So I don't know. Because the hiding in a locker doesn't guarantee, like, safety, because right. The alien can, like, sniff the locker or whatever, and you have to hold your breath when he does that. And so holding your breath
so
will
you
start
have
to
crazy
take,
bad morning breath.
I think it's the noise aspect of it. So you have to, like, hold your breath, but then you start to gradually lose health as you're doing that. But so you can be in a certain situation where if your health isn't high enough, it's like an automatic kill because it'll camp out for a certain amount of time. But yeah, I don't know. There's just, like, a lot of frustrating elements to it. Whatever.
Do you think you're going to finish it?
It depends. If if another game comes out that I'm interested in playing, probably not. If that doesn't happen, then maybe.
Understood.
So, as I said, I'm about halfway through it, so there's still, like, a long haul to go.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hmm.
We'll see.
I see. Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, so the long-awaited return of Hearthstone has happened. I think I brought this up as a news story 2 weeks ago.
I cry for help.
Yeah, exactly. So I've fallen back down the Hearthstone pit. But this time I'm playing on my iPhone, which is kind of the new thing that they've put out. And I have to say, it actually translates really, really well. So they've done an incredible job of actually adapting to the much smaller screen space. And I've only got one or two little complaints about the way they've set it up. But overall, like, if you would ask me in concept, how well it would deal with a screen that is easily one-fifth the size of what I'm used to playing on, I would have said, hey, it's not going to work. But it feels very natural. So you kind of, the cards, instead of being at the bottom center of the screen, are kind of put off to the bottom right side of the screen, and you tap on them to bring them up and look at them. And so that saves space. The minions, as you're filling up your board, will kind of decrease in size as you play more of them. So that helps keep things viewable no matter how many minions are on the board. The only problem then is if you're in a situation where you are loading up the board a lot, and it matters whether or not you've played, you know, as many minions as will fit, it's difficult to just tell by eyeballing it whether or not the board is full. That's going to be an actual problem in very, very rare situations. And if you're in one of those situations and care about it, you probably know the game well enough to not need the visual cue on that, so that's not a big deal.
So you know what's in play, what's on the table.
Yeah, like you know the count, and you shouldn't have trouble with that. The most interesting problem that I've encountered is that if you tap a spell card in your hand, you just kind of drag it onto the place you want to, you know, the thing you want to attack, which is exactly how it works with a mouse. If you drag it out onto the board, change your mind and say, oh, maybe I don't want to play this, and drag your finger back down, you might unwittingly cast the spell on yourself.
Okay.
And I lost a match.
Wait, so is,
by doing that. So, like, oh, go ahead.
So is this like you can cast Fireball on yourself?
Exactly. Yeah. And that is the exact spell. Is that, you know, I had the
why is that
day,
even an option?
Yeah, I know, right? So, yeah, I had a Fireball, and I drug it out, and I was like, oh, wait, no, I need to do something else first. And just because, and this is the disadvantage, if it's a little more cramped, I, you know, drug it back down and unwittingly just left off on my hero and killed myself. So I'm sure whoever I was playing was very grateful. But they could probably solve for that by having, like, when you are playing something on the board, the bottom left corner is like designated cancel button that you can drag over to that and know you're not going to hit anything.
Yeah.
Other than that one very specific example, I haven't had any trouble with like fat fingering stuff. So that's good.
Yeah. And like, what was that example? So like more of, you didn't realize that was a possibility for you to cast that on yourself. Like it kind of seems like they, you know,
Yeah, I certainly, well, I hope I certainly won't do it again. Yeah. Now that I'm aware of it, I can avoid it. I think I would be very surprised if that wasn't a fairly common occurrence though. Yeah. It's one game, so it's no big deal.
Recreating Cop Frog.
So when you tap on the cards and bring them up to choose from, it does cover up your hero icon. So now that I think about it, this is going to get super Hearthstone insider. So everyone else feel fairly confident tuning out for the next minute. But, there are cards that are cheaper, based on how much damage your hero has taken. So theoretically you could have a card that costs too much, but by casting Fireball on yourself, you could make it, you know, cost zero and be able to play a very big minion for very cheap if you were willing to take the damage.
At some point that is you casting from hit points, right? Like you are sacrificing one resource to make something cheaper for another resource.
Yeah. So theoretically it could be something I want to do. So it's like not like they should just edit it out of the game, but it should be very clear where you need to go if you just want to back out of a decision you've made. But you know, otherwise it's Hearthstone. They've got the Blackrock expansion out right now, which it's very clear everyone has played the first level of that and everyone has a specific card in their deck.
Yeah.
So I will be very surprised if that card is not nerfed at some point in the future. It basically every single turn it makes all the other cards in your hand cheaper.
Oh wow.
So in a game that is, you know, you get 10 mana to spend and that's as high as it ever goes. So every point of mana is a significant decrease in cost. That is, you know, that can just break a game.
Yeah.
It's interesting and it feels very overpowered. That might just be because people haven't figured out how to counter it yet. Nothing else to say about the game. It's fun and it's nice to be able to play it on the go. Mm-hmm. Maybe the one final thought. In my mind, Hearthstone is very easy to kind of play casually while doing something else.
Okay.
In actuality, I completely tune out the rest of the world while I'm playing.
Well, you're a person who will pace a room and, you know, anxiously as you're trying to figure out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now I can because it's on a mobile device. So
what does it mean?
It requires a lot more of your attention than I would have anticipated. So I've got to be careful about, you know, it's not the kind of game you can be like, oh, I'll just do a quick round while I'm semi-distracted by something else. That doesn't really work.
You can't play this at red lights.
No. No, God, no.
Nor should you play any game at red lights.
Right.
What about red light, green light? Can't play that at red lights? I always wait
into the intersection.
Okay, the only time you can't play red light, green light is at a yellow light because you have a decision to make.
I thought a decision was always slam on the gas.
I slam on both. I just stand on both the gas and the brake.
That
makes sense because then it looks like you're braking. So if a cop sees you, he probably won't arrest you.
Mm-hmm, I tried so hard. You should have seen it. It was terrible. Yeah.
So yeah, that's me.
Cool. Yeah, continue. So like has matchmaking gotten any easier since they widened the pool?
Just in terms of how easy it is to get connected to someone to play?
Yes.
Yeah, I've never had trouble, and maybe this is unique, but I've never had trouble getting into a match. Unless there's been connection issues. So it's there's always been someone at the ready.
Nice. And is that all? Is that the only game you played?
Yeah, I played some other stuff that I've talked about before, but nothing new to say about it.
Okay. David, round us out.
Sure. Well, a couple of things. Real briefly, I've played a little bit more Bloodborne. I took your advice and headed to the Charnel Lane or whatever it's called.
Oh yeah, Hemic Charnel.
I don't know. So far it's just kind of a thing. Fire sucks.
I made it.
Yeah. I made it to the witch, which seems like a really interesting boss, but I haven't quite figured out what's going on in that fight yet.
Okay.
So
it's cool.
It's a boss fight where I killed the boss and that didn't work. So,
yep.
So yeah, something interesting is going on here. So I'm kind of excited. I've just kind of been, take it easy from it, take a little bit of a hiatus, but I'm looking forward to getting back to it.
Yeah.
So, and other than that, again, real quick, I played like half an hour of Elder Scrolls Online because they did their big make it free to play update. And one of the big things is you can now pickpocket from NPCs, steal their property from tables and houses and stuff, like you can in Elder Scrolls, and kill random NPCs.
Okay.
And then if someone witnesses you doing it, you get a bounty and can get arrested and stuff like that, just like the Elder Scrolls games. So that adds a lot to the story. It's really cool. It's kind of fun. But unfortunately, it still suffers from the problem of this being an MMO, because the level system, you can't let me steal any items that would actually matter, because that would break the whole concept of, how MMOs work. Therefore, the system does actually accomplish a whole lot.
Okay.
So, you kind of know what I mean? It's a really cool system. It makes the game a lot more immersive, stuff like that. They just really need to figure out a good reason for you to do it.
Okay.
So, I know. It almost seems like a thing where, I'm probably never going to play the game, but I wish I could, give them $20 to be this is a feature that I want people to remember for when someone someday makes a good MMO and thinks, hey, remember that thievery system? It was pretty cool.
Man, for somebody who really doesn't like MMOs, you sure play a lot of them.
Yeah, I don't know.
The way you said that brought that up. It's it kind of seems like you've been searching for a home for a decade now.
Yeah, I know. It's I like some of the concepts of MMOs. I like some of the social stuff. I like the long form gameplay. My overall thing with MMOs is I think the developers kind of haven't exactly thought through that people don't actually care about massively multiplayer. Because, if you think about it, unless you're telling a war story, there are virtually no stories you can tell where it makes sense for there to be more than, 5 to 10 people in your group.
Okay.
Because, that's just, look at, The Lord of the Rings or Star Wars or Star Trek or
what about MAG, the massive action game?
unless you're doing military.
Okay.
Yes, and anything else, that's just not how stories work. And I think the problem with MMOs is what people really want is, you know, living worlds that, you know, where you can interact with lots of people. But that doesn't mean that you want to have like 50 bazillion people running around your supposedly abandoned, you know, mausoleum you're exploring.
Yeah, like you want a lot of collision, but you don't want forced collaboration with that many people.
Right. And I would say, I think even though I don't think it implements enough MMO sayings to really be a true MMO, I think like Destiny actually does a fairly good job of it, which where like when you're just out running around doing your whole thing, it'll dynamically, you know, spawn in, you know, other people to do, you know, team events and stuff like that. But then when you get to the actual storyline portions, you know, you'll be the only one around. You know, it becomes instanced.
Plus, the only way you can communicate is through dance.
Well, like that beads. Is true, too. Like I said, Destiny is not quite an MMO. So, on the other hand, the other game I've kind of been getting back into is Guild Wars. Well, Guild Wars 2, kind of in preparation for their new expansion. Yeah. So I'm really just, you know, don't have any big, you know, adventures or anything like that to talk about. But I'm really just, you know, reminded again of how cool a lot of the world and locations and, you know, races and backstory they've built for this game. So, although I do have to say I've probably spent the last 2 days just cleaning out my inventory, so that's kind of a thing.
Is this Guild Wars 1 or 2?
Two.
Okay.
Two.
Yeah. Is 1 still a thing? Like, do people still play that at all?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm pretty sure the server's still up, and I know. I've debated going back just because, like, you know, it's a very history-given game, driven game. So, like, the things that happen in Guild Wars 1 matter a lot to Guild Wars 2.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I don't think there's any, like, active development on it or anything like that. And, you know, the new expansion for 2 comes out sometime soon.
Well, I'm going to draw this to a close because it's getting really late here. Yeah. So, let's, do you guys want to button it up?
Let's do so.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. I apologize for any connection issues that may be apparent in the final edit of this. There's not much I can do about that right now. We're still trying to get this figured out. I will assume all of the blame for the audio quality as that goes there. But hopefully,
I will assume all of the blame rests on Ben.
I will assume that, yes. So thank you for your patience as we try and get it worked out. Trust me, the what you heard is not the half of it. So yeah. But in the meantime, we really appreciate people who've been liking us on Facebook and participating there. That is at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Ratings and reviews on iTunes are always nice. And you can tell your friends about us as well. We definitely benefit from that. Is there anything I'm missing, guys?
I don't think so.
Cool. Well, yeah. This has been The Level, and I've been Cole. You can find me at Cole Ross on Twitter.
I've been Dennis. You can find me at DFuria on Twitter.
I've been MoneySmith. You can find me at MoneySmith777 on the internet.
I've been Merkel, and you can find me at Merkelizer on Twitter.
Yeah, that's weird how it turned into like the last name kind of thing.
I thought about doing middle name, but
that's too much information. They can triangulate.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah.
Wait, what's your middle name?
Ernest.
Oh, man, should I beep that?
I don't care. I don't
put I think it would matter. Be funnier if you bleeped it. Therefore I think should.
Oh. Well, until next time, watch out for Jack the Dripper. Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we answer your questions by reading them. What? I'm going to do that again because I... guys.
My
head's in a million fucking places. I'm so angry.
Cole, dude, just relax, man.
Yeah.
It's all good. Have a beer.